Shabbat Shalom, everybody. And Chag Purim Sameach. Happy Purim. So today we're going to celebrate and discuss the important feast of Purim. But first, let's spend a minute looking at our weekly parasha. So our parasha this week is called Titzaveh, which comes from the verb tzava, command. Titzaveh, he shall command, or you shall command. And this is when God, he's speaking with Moses on Mount Sinai, and he's telling him what to tell the children of Israel regarding the building of the tabernacle. Now, when it comes to the tabernacle, it's sometimes easy to get lost in a lot of the details and how each thing functions. And so we're going to, instead of focusing in on our parasha right away, we're going to kind of zoom out a little bit and see what's happening in the book of Exodus more broadly. So the entire book of Exodus could be split up into three easy sections. First, you have the redemption of Israel. This is when God took Israel, brought them out of Egypt, and brought them into the wilderness. This is their redemption. Next, you have the revelation to Israel. This is when God revealed his law on Mount Sinai to the nation of Israel. And then finally, we have the relationship with Israel. And this is where we have the details about the tabernacle. We started here last week in our parasha, and we're going to continue focusing on this for the next few weeks. Now, keep in mind that the tabernacle represents the very presence of God. It is sort of like a new Garden of Eden. Just as God dwelled in the Garden of Eden with humanity, now he's doing it again in the tabernacle. And there are many parallels you see between the Garden of Eden and the tabernacle. So for example, in Genesis 3:8, it says that God walked with man in the Garden of Eden. That same verb is used in Leviticus when it speaks about God at the tabernacle. He says, I will also walk among you. Also, does anyone remember when God kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden? Who did he put to defend the entrance? A cherub. When you go into the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies, you have two cherubim. Again, defending the presence of God. And finally, when Adam and Eve were out, and this is a very good question. If you know this, that's amazing. What direction did they go in when they were kicked out of the garden? East, very good. Whenever you read east, you know it's not a great thing. They were kicked out towards the east. Where do you enter the tabernacle? From the east, going in. So there's a lot of parallels between the two. And the main point we see here, you know, last week we spoke about Yeshua coming down in the incarnation, being God's presence on earth. And all of this points to God's desire to be in relationship with you, to dwell with you. And we're seeing another testimony of that. Now, as important as a tabernacle is, when you read through Exodus 25 through 40, the section dealing with the relationship of God, it could get a little complicated. And there's two good reasons for that. So if you ever feel like it's hard to read, you're not alone. First, it's going to feel like there's a lot of repetition. And the reason for that is because in the first six chapters, when God's instructing, he's giving all the details about what to build, the type of linen to use, the different items. And then in the last four chapters, you actually have Israel building it. So if you don't see that distinction, you're kind of like, boy, didn't I just read this entire thing before? So you do have some repetition going on. So keep that in mind. Second, the instructions for the tabernacle are not given in any order. It's not like you enter and then, you know, the order is given for the details. It kind of jumps around from the Holy of Holies to the outside linen to the altar. So if you're ever going to do a study on the tabernacle, this is what I tell my students if I teach on the Torah, watch a YouTube video on the tabernacle as it kind of, so you have a mental image of what it looks like, and then you read it and the details will start to make sense. But if we look at the tabernacle just generally here, first, you have the entrance, which again, you go in through the east, entering into God's presence. And there are really three main areas. You first have the outer court. This is where you have the animal sacrifice. This is where the priest washes the hands. Then you have the holy place, the showbread. This is where we have the lampstand. We spoke about these things last week. And then finally, you have the Holy of Holies. This is where you have the Ark of the Covenant, God's very presence that they were only able to enter into once a year. So last week we spoke about these details in the holy place, in the Holy of Holies, and then our parasha this week actually focuses in on the priest. We're going to look at the priest. And in Exodus 28 and 29, we look at what the priest wore in terms of his clothing and then of the anointing of the priest in Exodus 29. So here's kind of an image that we could have in our mind. Now, when you read Exodus 28, you're going to see a lot of commands regarding the clothing, the color that they need to wear, the different pieces of jewelry on their head or on their chest, the different stones, the different engravings. And there's a lot of detail that we could find in there. But there's one reoccurring theme that we find throughout Genesis 28 that I think helps us better understand the function of the priest and also helps us better understand the status of Yeshua as our high priest today. You see, as you read about the clothing, you're going to see how the high priest carries the name of Israel on him as he goes into God's presence. On the shoulder of the priest, you're going to have two stones, six names here, of the tribes of Israel. Why? It tells us Aaron shall bear or carry their names before the Lord on his two shoulders as a memorial. He is representing the nation of Israel as one person before the Lord. He is like that mediator. Then when you look at the breastplate of judgment that he wears on his chest, you have the 12 stones, and here it says Aaron shall again carry or bear the name of the nation of Israel. Why? For a memorial before the Lord. In other words, there is no way Israel could ever feel forgotten by the Lord. The high priest was always there representing them. Even the gold plate on his turban, it says Aaron shall take away or carry the guilt of the holy things. And so this language of carrying, of representing, it reminds us of the scapegoat in Yom Kippur, who you pray over and who carries the guilt of Israel away. And in the same way, the priest was Israel's representative. He embodied the nation of God, or the nation of God before the Lord. And so the study of the priest's clothing, it helps us, I think, for at least two reasons. First, this helps us better appreciate how Yeshua is our high priest, who is in the heavenly realm representing us right now. The book of Hebrews says he, Yeshua, is able to save forever those who draw near to him, since he always makes intercession for him. He's always representing us before the throne. So then the question for us today is, just as the high priest had Israel's name on him entering into God's presence, does Yeshua have our name on him interceding for us? Do we have a relationship with Yeshua this morning? Yeshua warns us, one of the scariest verses in the New Testament is in Matthew 7, where Yeshua says, many are going to come to me and say, Lord, Lord, didn't I do this? Didn't I do that? And he's going to say, I never knew you. So the question is, do we know Yeshua? Is he our high priest this morning? Is he interceding for us? If not, remember the warning in the book of Hebrews. Today, if you hear God's voice, do not harden your heart. Today is the day of salvation. Today is the day we could partake in Yeshua's priesthood. So first, we could appreciate, even by looking at the priest's clothing, how Yeshua is representing us before the Father. The second thing we could appreciate as followers of Yeshua is how we're supposed to act in a kind of priestly manner towards one another. Just as the high priest carried Israel's burdens on himself and represented them, we are called to carry one another's burdens as well. When Paul wrote to the community in Galatia, in Galatians 6, he said, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of the Messiah. The law of God, which is love God and love your neighbor, is fulfilled by sitting with one another and carrying each other's burdens. So if somebody shares with you a difficulty, a struggle, we don't ridicule and we don't rejoice, but we sit and we support. And in that way, we show the harmony that demonstrates the power of God. You know, Yeshua said, how are they going to know you're my disciples? By your love for one another. And that's what we demonstrate. So all of this, it gives testimony to the importance of the priesthood, even the clothing that we could easily read over. It shows the importance of it in better understanding Yeshua today. And one last thing I want to mention, the imagery of a type of someone standing in the gap, kind of as the priest did, this imagery of someone standing in between, I find it very appropriate for our celebration of Purim this morning. You see, the story of Purim, it recounts how a man named Haman, Yes, all right, perfect. Okay, we're supposed to boo when we hear that name. Thank you, Jackie. So you hear how a man named Haman tried to destroy all the Jewish people, right? And it didn't happen, thankfully. But unfortunately, anti-Semitism isn't just a story in the Hebrew Bible. It's something we live with today. But one element that is not always emphasized in the history of anti-Semitism is the role of non-Jewish people who stood in that gap and protected the Jewish people in times of struggle. Whether it was during the Holocaust when non-Jewish people would risk their lives by hiding Jewish people, or those of us today who stand up against anti-Semitic theology or cultural stereotypes. I just want to say I'm very grateful to be in a community of Jews and Gentiles who love Yeshua and who stand against anti-Semitism and all injustices. So Purim is a great time to remember that. So in conclusion, as we celebrate Purim, let's remember to rejoice in our Messiah, our High Priest, to bear one another's burdens, and to always stand for God's truth in every situation, no matter the cost. And in that, I would like to ask all the children to just come straight downstairs. We're going to do a little prayer. We're going to celebrate Purim. If you guys hear a little party going on, don't get jealous. We're having fun downstairs, but we're going to do our party. So if all the kids could go straight downstairs, we'll see you.